Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A Mountie always gets his man. It's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century. From I Love Lucy to News Radio, I'm your TV guy, Brett White, and I'm also a reporter, producer for Decider.com, and this is the latest installment of the quarantine era of the podcast. How much longer is it going to go on? Maybe for the rest of our lives? We're living in hell, but we're going to act like it's fun for the next hour. This week, I am joined... quarantined in Brooklyn, Becky Chicoine.
Hello.
And Matt Little.
We want to collectively be known as the Quarantine Dream.
Oh.
Quarantine Dream. Wait, is that the Katy Perry song?
Yeah.
Make me
feel like I'm living.
You could have let me sing it.
I could have, because she knows how to.
No. I think there's a Katy Perry impersonator in the Relish.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, too late.
Wait, so when was... How many days?
I
am truly at my wit's end. This is like... So for me, this is, I think, day... I mean, 60 maybe? I mean, I'm at 2 months.
I'm not counting. I'll tell you that. And I'll also tell you, Matt has been working from home before this, so... I don't know if you even know.
Well, it's interesting because I've been writing from home since October, and I thought I was slowly going insane, and then Becky started working from home too, and we've slowly devolved together. So
yeah, now it's like, oh, now the rest of the world's catching up with you.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, come on, plenty of room on the wagon.
Jesus Christ! I mean, it's good times, but you know what? What a better time! What a better time was. And I used to feel icky saying that yesterday was a better time, but you know what? They didn't have in 1971 fucking coronavirus.
They did not.
Thank you.
They did not.
So this week we'll be traveling to February 22nd, 1971. Cold Turkey, also starring Bob Newhart, ruled the box office. One Bad Apple by the Osmonds topped the charts, and CBS aired the Carol Burnett Show episode 422. Matt and Becky, you must have seen episode 422 before today.
So, you know, I did not.
Well, I'll tell you what. I want to say to anyone listening too.
Okay. Here he goes.
Well, this episode's breaking the format a little bit. This episode's breaking the format a little bit, and I'll say that this was a request of mine.
I sent you a list of like a dozen perfectly good sitcoms.
You did. You sent a list of a ton of really great sitcoms, but it had struck me like a bolt out of the blue. And I had been thinking about Carol Burnett and the Carol Burnett Show recently. For one reason or another, I think a Tim Conway sketch went across my field of vision, and I just remembered, how much I loved, watching the later version of the show. The newer one from the late 80s. I used to watch it with my grandmother on Saturdays, along with, the other things that we would watch around that time were Golden Girls and Empty Nest. So those were.
That's a Saturday night.
Yeah. Those were my bonding memories with my grandmother when I was a lot younger. And I really, really fell in love with Carol Burnett as a performer as a kid around the same time that I had also learned about SNL and Letterman. I was fortunate enough to have like discovered this in incredible performer. So I had not seen this specific episode. I had picked this because I know about your love of Bob Newhart, and it felt like
that spot.
Yeah. And I wanted to watch an episode, and the Bob Newhart connection felt so close Beck, what? Tell me what you
tell
feel.
Tell me more. Tell me more. No, I mean, I've always loved Carol Burnett. I don't think I ever really knew, like, I hadn't watched much of her shows. You know, I've seen clips, as they say, but I hadn't watched much of her shows. I mean, I was born in 2000, so, you know, that era wasn't me, you know, as a Gen Z.
Baby, don't tell them that until you clear the legal hurdle.
Matt was born in 1969,
Ben
was born in 2000.
Yeah.
No, that's a bad bit.
That's a bad bit.
Speaking of bad bits, we might get into it with the show.
So, yeah, I just looked it up, and, yeah, the Saturday night 1989 to 1990 TV season, NBC Saturday Night Lineup was Golden Girls, Empty Nest, Carol and Company, and then something called Down Home. Which was an American sitcom starring Judith Ivey, Ray Baker, Eric Allen Kramer, Dackie Matthews, Timothy Scott, and Getty Watanabe?
Yeah, from Revenge of the Nerds, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And Gung Ho. I also did not grow up watching Carol Burnett's show because it wasn't on Nick at Night.
True.
So that's always my main way to get into shows. But of course, if you are a person that lives, you've seen the Gone with the Wind wearing the drapes.
Went with the wind.
Yeah, that's a thing. That's just all over pop culture. And then also the growing up in the era of Jimmy Fallon and Horatio Sanz never being able to keep a straight face.
Yes.
People always talk about Tim Conway and Harvey Korman never being able to keep a straight face.
Yeah. So one thing
present in this episode.
So one thing that that they would do with every episode of the Carol Burnett Show, they taped every episode live twice. In front of two different live studio audiences.
Uh-huh.
So if someone blows a take on the on the video that you see, that means that they probably blew it worse in the other taping.
Now, okay, but let me just say,
sure,
it is delightful to an extent when an actor breaks to an extent.
If you
love the actor.
Absolutely.
So I'm sure that it wasn't just that they couldn't. That was part of the thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It isn't there's a difference between blowing your take because you aren't caring enough and blowing your take while also you're still trying.
Right, exactly. Yes. And it's you're having so much fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I excuse blowing a take or laughing when it is clear that you're trying not
to. You're trying.
To.
You're pushing through.
The Fallon and Sands stuff was they were clearly just fucking with each other on live television.
Right.
Yes.
And therefore not as committed as a Corman or Conway.
Right.
True.
And yeah, this is a break from the format, which, you know what? Hey, we're in quarantine era. I did Batman 66, which was nominated for an Outstanding Comedy Emmy. So also Carol Burnett was, I'm sure, as well.
Oh yeah. That's actually,
series.
I'm assuming so, but I didn't. Then. Yeah.
So you know what? Everyone deal with it. It's my show.
Yeah, that's right.
Damn right.
And who cares? So yeah, this week on Must Have Seen TV, we'll be talking about the Carol Burnett Show episode 422. It is the 22nd episode of season 4 and was written by Arthur Julian, Don Hinckley, Jack Mendelsohn, Stan Hart, Larry Siegel, Haywood King, Roger Beatty, Arnie Rosen, Kenny Solms, and Gail Parent, and directed by Dave Powers. Here's how Amazon describes the episode, which for some reason is broken up into two parts instead of just being one 44-minute episode, whatever. Bob Newhart appears in Carol and Sis as Roger's accountant, whose wife makes Carol feel inferior. Also, a hungover Harvey discovers an even bigger headache, fireside girl Alice Portnoy, and Carol salutes MGM with the help of guest stars Cheetah Rivera and Bob Newhart. Spoofs of classic movies abound, including Ninotchka, Blackboard Jungle, Gone with the Wind, and more. Matt and Becky, how accurate are those descriptions?
Those are pretty much 100% accurate.
That's literally the rundown that was taped backstage.
Yeah.
Accurate.
Didn't tell them what the running order was.
So here's something that I discovered after requesting to watch this. I clicked on it, and if you click on it right now, and who knows, it may be leaving Amazon Prime soon. I believe you had mentioned it's going to Shout Factory soon.
Shout Factory TV will be getting all up to stream for free. on June 1st, all 11 seasons.
Wow.
So the one thing that I learned, and this was very surprising to me, right? I went to Amazon and I clicked on the Carol Burnett show, except that I saw that every season had either 2 or 1 star reviews, which to me seemed ridiculous, right? So I clicked to it and it turns out that all of the digital files that we have available to us are these butchered half hour versions of the show. The original show was an hour long variety show every week. And ever since the original airings, they have slashed it to 30 minute episodes in syndication. So the reviews are all complaining about how we don't have the original versions. I'm very curious because Shout is a very restorative production company.
Yeah.
Do they and are they going to do that?
Let me log into my Gmail and pull my work Gmail and pull up that press release that I got to see.
Wow.
Because, so speaking of that, if you go on Wikipedia, it lists that, oh boy, all these, I can also just say, press people, like, cool it. I know they're just getting a lot of unsolicited pitches for random things. And
press people, cool it.
Just
cool it. I know, hey, you know. People are under the assumption that pop culture writers are working less right now because there's less content being made that's new. Isn't that true? Because literally every single celebrity has turned into their own TV production studio, and there are reunions of literally everything happening all the time.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's being very stressful. Anyway,
yes.
So all 11 seasons of the Carol Burnett Show to stream on Shout Factory. So as I was saying, if you go on Wikipedia, it'll say that the average length of a Carol Burnett Show episode was 54 minutes.
Wow.
If you watch it on Prime, the two episodes put together are 44 minutes. That's 10 missing minutes, and then also they double up like the credits.
Yeah,
so weird,
strange.
So if you watch the first half, it ends, and all of a sudden they're all in like Mountie costumes and stuff, and it's like, oh, you're gonna have to watch the next. Yeah. So let's see. Should I just read the whole? No. Many of the episodes, including the stream release, will be available to watch for the first time since the original broadcast more than 40 years ago. Fans will be able to watch all the show's episodes and see the evolution of key characters and sketches.
Wow.
A marathon that's starting it off. From season 1's Carol, blah, blah, blah. Some of his beloved sketches, but less family. I don't know, it doesn't mention it, but it could be. I mean, that would be Shout Factory's whole jam, so.
Yeah.
Well, and Shout Factory is a free service as well. And they just got the Johnny Carson show, which is what they're calling the Tonight Show.
Oh, hello. Okay.
So that's cool.
Yeah. I love Shout Factory. Shout out to Shout Factory.
Maybe they can be the first ever sponsor for this show.
There you go. Yeah.
Actually, I'm learning about
sponsors because I think Acast is my sponsor. I know what? I don't know. Whatever. I'm feeling very loose tonight, and I have not had anything to drink. I'm just punch drunk from the punches of
the quarantine. Pandemics.
But anyway, the episode starts, and I will be honest, I've only ever seen one full episode of Carol Burnett Show, and it is this one, and I've watched this one twice because Bob Newhart is in it. I watched it a couple years ago.
I didn't know that before picking this! That makes it even better!
Wow.
It's a good one. So, it's weird watching it. So, when it starts, it just starts with, like, full lights up. Carol Burnett comes out on stage. Let's talk about what she's wearing, because it is a great look.
Oh,
it's an incredible look.
Yes.
I will say that. And I was really enthralled with the look. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Felt good about that.
It's like a purple t-shirt dress.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the top is, like, a purple, like, very nice luxe-looking t-shirt. Mm-hmm. The bottom is, like, a turquoisey green, yellow, and purple, like, stripe, flowy dress.
Well, it's,
and the middle is, like, a corset-type belt
like, feminine Joseph Technicolor Dreamcoat sort of situation.
Yeah.
And I was into it. And I guess that, like, belt thing was kind of like it in the 70s, maybe.
Yeah. And, the costume designer.
Bob Mackie.
Designed the look of Mama's Family. Like,
yes. Well, he also designed the curtain rod dress for Went with the Wind, which is now in the Smithsonian Museum.
Well, later on, when Bob Newhart is wearing that Monsieur Lafop, Marquis de Fop.
Marquis de Fop, yeah.
Like, oh, that's Bob Newhart wearing Bob Mackie.
Yeah.
It's just wild.
Yeah.
So she comes out and she takes questions from the audience. And
I loved it. It was so earnest.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, yeah, because we're so trained, I was like, wait, this isn't a bit? These aren't, like, writers in the show?
Yeah, those aren't plants in the audience? Yeah.
I want to talk about just the overall vibe of the Carol Burnett Show, because it is unlike anything that we have on television today.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the vibe of it, when you realize that this aired at, you know, 10 p.m. on a, well, that for the most part of its run, it aired at, like, 10 p.m. on Saturday, mm-hmm. after a two-hour power block of four half-hour sitcoms. When you're going into the Carol Burnett Show, that opening monologue is really, like, just setting you in, like, okay, hey, like, you know, kids are probably asleep. You probably poured yourself some, you know, drinks.
Right.
Yeah.
We're just going to, like, ease into it, and then we're going to do some comedy, or there's going to be some song. Like, it's a very comforting, welcoming feeling.
Yeah, yes. And it wasn't, like, a monologue or anything like that. I mean, like, it also made me think, you know, like, Fallon, and they all take questions before the shows, but it's not taped
on
and
the
aired.
Air, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Hey, Late Show, David Letterman did this before every single show.
Yeah. Every single show.
Hey, you know, me and Matt were both pages. We can break the NDAs that we never signed.
That's true. We never signed them.
Dave would come out before every single show and do this with the studio audience, but it was never taped.
Yeah.
They all do. I mean, yeah. I mean, when we went to Fallon, like, he does the same thing. But, yeah, it's so interesting. I was like, oh, okay. So they just taped it, and that was her opening.
Yeah.
I would say also easy. But I also think, like, they probably trusted her so much to give the correct and good and great answer.
There's not a pre-screened vibe to this at all.
It
feels like, because no one is mic'd, it is literally the audience just, and kudos to the audience for restraint, just shouting questions at Carol Burnett.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I think, and I might be wrong about this, but I think that Q&A segment at the top of the show was Carol's husband's idea. Who served as an executive producer on the show,
like,
as well.
Man.
I wasn't saying it in that sense, but
here for the boys.
Yeah, here we go. Yeah, let's talk about the men. They don't get enough credit. No, this is what I'm trying to say about Carol is that, I think that it's very clear in the show and the enjoyment that everyone has in being on the show, that it truly is a collaborative and like team environment.
Yeah.
I think that if you're on a show where the person's name is at the top of the marquee, right? The Carol Burnett Show, you're often, and the sort of stereotype is that that person's going to be kind of difficult to deal with because they're wild enough. But Carol is inviting the audience into the show. She is inviting the guest stars into the show. She's just such a warm presence throughout, even when she's being, even in the first sketch that we see where she's sort of the put upon wife, and is upset. She's still so just like engaging and warm.
What is super cool about the opening is, like, the audience is so familiar with her as well. And, like, they're all asking, like, hey, when you come into Detroit, when you come in here, hey, here's a doll I made for you. Like, they're very just, like, not even starstruck, really. It's just, like, they're just chilling with Carol, you know?
Yes.
Especially that little fresh boy at the end who's, like, what's gotten you further in Hollywood, your body or your mouth?
But she's like, I'm not going to answer that. I'm just going to be like, okay.
Yeah.
You're coming to drinks.
Yeah.
And that was like a child asking that. That was great.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we get the intro, which is the janitor lady character, just like an animated version of that. I also really love the them realizing that it's on CBS and it's the Carol Burnett Show. And just like really leaning into that.
Who, I was trying to look, the only name I could find for the animation department of Carol Burnett was Bill Littlejohn, who was like an acclaimed animator. Now, I don't know if he's the person that animated that sequence. But I would love to know who animated the titles on that show. Cause I really love there's so much personality even in the animation of the actors and everything in that short minute sequence that I really loved.
I love a good animated opening.
Yeah. You don't see that often anymore.
You don't see it anymore. Not these days.
not with this economy.
We're all UCB RIP trained sketch writers.
RIP.
Like, we've done sketch.
True.
Yes.
Pour one out for the New York branch.
Pour it out.
True. But that's also what I, so as you, as a sketch writer, as a comedy writer, as you watch all of this unfold, except for when you get to the musical numbers in the second half, it's a little bit different, but, you're, what I really loved is that they underline what each sketch is going to be about so clearly and then hit it so well. Even when you kind of know that, like, as a writer, sometimes as you're watching stuff, you start to see the math of the process. So you can guess ahead at what the punchline's going to be. Even when you can do that, they're still having so much fun performing, everybody on set, that you don't, it doesn't take away from the enjoyment of the actual sketch unfolding.
No, not at all. It's fun watching good people perform well.
Yeah.
The first sketch is just, it is Carol Burnett is playing a kind of like frazzled, like in a rut wife.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband's accountant just drops by to like drop off their taxes. He has a new wife. His new wife is a smoking hot blonde. And then it's just like Harvey Korman is enamored with her. Carol Burnett is frazzled. It's just like, it's is that really a, well, what's the game?
No,
what's
the game is that wives are lazy.
I thought the game was lusty husband.
Yeah, it's one of those
secretly
I mean,
lusty
not
husband.
A game. Like, I
yeah,
mean,
that's the thing. It's like yeah. It's not because like a game is like what's the unusual thing,
right?
And so, like from a UCB standpoint, maybe this would not fly in a sketch 101. But then again. Who has a lasting legacy? Carol Burnett of the UCB.
True, true. I mean, you can't.
Well, also one of those programs was taught by a robot in a poofy wig, and the other one was made by Carol Burnett. So, but that's go ahead.
You can't say a bad thing about Carol Burnett. Obviously, as a performer, she's incredible, and the sketches were very much of their time. Like the
for sure.
And also, I feel like the character's name in that first sketch was Carol. I think he called her Carol.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a Carol.
So I was like,
sis.
So like, I couldn't get it out of my head. I was like, oh, she has her own TV show. Why is she making you dinner? Like, what are you?
like Harvey Korman's just an asshole.
Yeah,
it was that's like, so true.
I was like, if she's playing Carol, she's like very busy.
I did love, so Bob Newhart plays the accountant that comes over, and I love seeing this side of Bob. This is pre the Bob Newhart show, so this is pre him getting into sitcoms. At this point, he was a stand-up comedian, variety show entertainer, and if you are only familiar with him via his sitcoms, where he's always playing a very, kind of not like low-energy straight man, simmering kind of rage kind of person.
Put upon.
When you see him in sketches in the 60s and early 70s, he has this range that I find so delightful because it is so against your expectations. When he comes in as that accountant, he's making bad jokes and he's like laughing too hard.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. The laugh is so good.
Yeah. And it's like the
so
kind of
funny.
Stuff you don't get to see when he's playing his characters on his sitcoms, and it's delightful.
Yeah. I mean, he was very funny.
And so the button-up mind of Bob Newhart came out in 61. 60. Oh, God. So this is...
I think it was 60 because I think they're celebrating the anniversary this year.
Okay. So it had been 11 years at this point that he had been an established cabaret performer. He was a solo performer, but we had not quite seen the Newhart that we know today. And
so like at this point, what's a fun fact is he and Carol Burnett hosted a show together in the mid-60s called The Entertainers that only lasted one season.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that.
And
okay.
I also found in 1962, so I have gone down a Carol Burnett rabbit hole recently because I'm watching The Lucy Show.
Oh, yeah.
Season 5 of The Lucy Show, she just shows up. Now, this is 1966, so 5 years before this episode, Carol Burnett shows up on The Lucy Show fully formed, essentially doing a like, holy shit, Carol Burnett is on the Lucy show this week kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, she comes in, she gets all the lines, she dominates both episodes over Lucille Ball, and it is just like this tour de force performance from Carol Burnett. You're like, what the fuck? This is 5 years before. How did the, and so I did a research into like her history and stuff. Yeah. So at this point, she'd already been on the, I think it was called the Gary Moore Show.
Okay.
Which was a variety show in the late 50s, early 60s, which she was like the young ingenue standout performer, like, yeah, you know, that they pulled off of Broadway and put on TV. So she was famous from that. Then she got the Entertainers, which was with Bob Newhart for one season. And then she did those Lucy shows. And then she got Carol Burnett. Like, so I don't know, it's just really cool seeing, like, when Bob Newhart comes on this show, like, they buds.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, don't forget, too, so Lucille Ball was so enamored with Carol Burnett that she actually she told Carol that she would write and create a sitcom for Carol to star in. And Carol Burnett said no, because she was more interested in the idea of hosting this variety show that CBS had offered her, which, I mean, imagine if like that, like Lucille Ball offering that today, like I'm trying to think of someone on TV today that would be like that, that would be like, what's his name? The creator of Blackish, like offering someone,
Kenya Barris.
Offering someone a show and being like, I'm going to tailor this to you, and then being like, I'm good, I'm going to do this this sketch show instead.
Yeah. Oh, man, yeah, that is truly wild. So in the first sketch, who would everyone want to play the most of all those characters?
Mm.
Is this a fun game to play?
Yeah.
So we got Harvey Korman as the sexually frustrated, not henpecked because he's an asshole.
Yeah.
He's pecking himself, husband.
Carol Burnett
as the take charge boss bitch wife. Hey.
Hey.
Vicki Lawrence as her little sister who was in the first scene and then just like pieces out immediately.
Yep.
Bob the accountant, or Blanche, the hot lady.
I feel like, I mean, I would want to be Bob the accountant.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to be him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would be. Yeah. I gotta be honest, I'd be Blanche the hot lady.
Like, you think that you would be cast as that, or you would want to be? Because the way you said you
would. Whoa, finish this carefully. Wait, what?
What? Well, what, you want to be Blanche?
That's, yeah, I would play that character. Yeah. I like the idea of just playing, like, the clueless, like, object of affection.
Of playing that character.
Rude.
I might play Harvey Korman's character.
Wow.
I'm cantankerous.
I feel like I would play Carol, too.
Well, I feel like I'd play Carol.
Yeah.
Well, if we're talking about Carol, I think I'd play Carol.
Okay. Wait, you're talking about Carol Burnett or the character Carol in the sketch?
Carol, yeah, both.
Yeah, both.
Well, Carol in the sketch is Carol Burnett, the person playing herself.
Yeah.
My favorite joke might have been, so at one point, like, Bob, when he sits down on the couch, Blanche, like, puts all these pillows behind him, and then Bob, like, leans back and he says, yeah, I have a bad back. And then Harvey Korman says, of course.
Yeah. Yes.
Which I realized, like, that's a sex joke. It's like, yeah, Bob has a bad back because they are going to pound town.
They're doing it. I loved when Carol, like, sat on top of Harvey to be like, I'm going to sit in the middle.
It was just like, yeah.
That was really – and then also at the very end – when, like, after they leave and Carol is just, like, angry, and then Harvey, I don't know, what is his name in the sketch? Harvey Korman is trying to, like, calm her down.
George,
and be like, babe, I love you. I'm always going to love you, even after, like, et cetera, I will always love you, Blanche.
Blanche! Yeah.
But what's so funny is, like, as soon as he says Blanche, he lets out this guttural reaction scream to what he just said.
Yes. Yeah, they both yell at the same time. Like, they both realize what he's done. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah, it was good.
So, would this sketch have flown at Mod Night, UCB's sketch show? Monthly sketch.
Well, Becky, you were on Mod Night. I feel like you would have a better opinion.
I think
of
we
this.
All know that the answer is no. I mean, I think, unfortunately, there would have to be some, like,
I think there's
talking potato in the background, or
I think everyone's acting like too much of like a real human for it to.
No, I mean, I also think it's like offensive now. Like, there's a lot certain. Of issues. Like, and that's what I'm saying. I think, like,
yeah.
But yeah, well, there's no like, there's no game. What, this is just like a real.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What makes this work is knowing, like, it's these performers and they can just do anything and it is funny because they're so committed and. The patience to it as well to like start the show with like a grounded relationship sketch that's like a very simple premise like it's very smart. The second sketch is a super super solid like this could be on SNL right now.
Is this the Hangover sketch? The Girl Scout.
Alice Portnoy.
Yes. Okay.
That was a recurring character on the series. This one is 100%
so funny.
Like by the moves. And you can tell that she, like, the audience loves the moment they see her. And this one feels razor sharp.
Yeah. There are no notes.
Yeah. No notes.
No notes at all. You get back in the back alley. Delaney's like, perfect.
Yeah. Delaney's perfect. Hey, awesome. That was great. That was great.
But I love this character too.
Right.
Because what's
Urkel
that?
In my notes. I wrote Urkel in my notes.
100%.
You gotta love a precocious youth.
Yeah. You have there is to a good. Love. Just like so. I'm also watching a lot of Family Matters. Okay. Urkel is at his best when he is smart and actually aware of what's going on, and then he can like, oh, okay. Like, the moment where. So Harvey Korman is playing a guy that's like drunk and hungover after a party, and the Girl Scout Alice Portnoy knocks on the door, comes in. Harvey's like, he's kind of like, this is a kid. I don't want to tell her that I'm like hungover from getting crunk last night. So he's like, I have a cold. And then she's like, oh yeah, you have a cold. On top of that hangover. Like, it's so funny. And it clues you into so much about that character of like, oh, she's in on it.
She knows.
She has what I love. That's what it is that Alice Portnoy has agency. Yeah. Within the sketch, she's at that time, that sketch sort of and that character sort of flips the ideal on its head where, you know, adults are supposed to be speaking wisdom to the children. And it's and here comes a child with wisdom for them. And also, not only that, is smarter than all the adults in the room. She's smarter than him the entire sketch because she outwits him all the way to the very last line.
Yeah.
It heightened in super interesting ways that I didn't, because she's there basically like trying to raise money to go on like a trip or whatever.
Yeah.
And so she has like nickels in a can and is like banging it around, which is causing a lot of noise. She's like, you know, what'll muffle that sound is the dollar bills. She heightens it to the point where she's like, she gets her money and actually on her way out, she's like, oh yeah, that, you know, make me forget about this. What about that picture I took of you at the party? Like, then it turns like she's also blackmailing him. And it's just delightful.
Yes. Well, that's again, speaking to the intelligence of the character that, Harvey shuts the door behind her and then he goes, the negative. And he opens it again and she already has it and is just yelling, $50, $50.
And the most heightened beat of it is after everything is said and done, she's frustrating him to the point where he starts to strangle her. But at that point, Vicki Lawrence is in there like snapping a photo of them.
Yes.
And it's like, that's so great.
By the way, quick shout out, Vicki Lawrence, who looked like Carol Burnett's sister.
Quick shout out to Vicki Lawrence.
Yeah, quick
really
shout out to
Vicki.
She did
look, I was confused because Carol kept, or like, in the first one referred to her as her sister, and I was like, oh yeah, that's her sister. And then I was like, wait, what, it's not?
Yeah.
And it's, so like, Vicki Lawrence, so, in high, because, first of all, Vicki Lawrence is 22.
She started the show when she was 18.
Yeah. Which, that is crazy. And why did she start at 18? Because in high school, in her high school talent show, she did a Carol Burnett routine. And she wrote Carol Burnett and was like, hey, like, everyone says I do a good impression of you. Can you come see me perform? Carol Burnett fucking did. Because she was working on, I guess it was this show. She was like, I need someone to play my little sister, so I should go check out this woman, this high schooler. And she goes, and that then she gets hired out of high school.
Psychotic. That's actually
unbelievable.
And then, like, that is literally, you would write that as your fanfic. As your, like, personal Mary Sue, like, here's how I became Bob Newhart's little brother on the Bob Newhart show.
Don't happen like that no more.
You would... That's the type of thing where you would be like, hey, let's make fun of fan fiction. You would type in like Scott Stapp fanfic and then read out loud the story that someone wrote that was like, oh, yeah, I was a Florida man.
In a pre-cover band in high school, and then Scott Stapp came, but he got laryngitis that night in town, so then I got to sing for Creed.
Like, yeah. And you wrote that, right, Beck?
I wrote that.
You did write that.
I love Scott Stapp.
Scott, we won't.
Love
nope.
Scott Stapp.
Stop?
Scat stop.
I love Scat stop.
Scat stop is cool.
So it is wild that like that is Vicki Lawrence's trajectory, and then because she's so young in this, and she doesn't like look 22.
No, it does not.
So it is so wild that when you're watching Mama's Family 10 years later or 11 years later, and she's playing a woman in her 60s, but she is like 34.
Yes.
So, and then the fact that like she was on Cool Kids.
Wow.
Late into Cool Kids.
Yeah.
And was finally the age that Mama was supposed to be, like 30 years later.
It's crazy. And I'll tell you too, so obviously, like, I had discovered Carol Burnett in the 80s, and I didn't know about the connection to Mama's Family until, you know, a couple of years later. And then when I saw Vicki Lawrence out of makeup for the first time, I thought someone switched photos. I was like, no, Mama's like a 65-year-old woman.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this is where a bunch of Mounties come out and start singing. If you're watching on Amazon, you're like, what the hell's going on?
Yes.
So that's why you go to the next episode, because that's where the second half is. And so the second half is just, and they come out, like Carol Burnett comes out, and it's like, okay, cool. Now we're just going to do another tribute to a movie studio. Here's our MGM Studios review.
So crazy.
Yes. A bunch of sketches about MGM movies.
And I'll tell you what, there's another Gone with the Wind sketch.
Yeah.
In this one. And I, for a second, it started and it was clearly Gone with the Wind. And I got really excited. I was like, is this a compilation and we're just going to see that sketch? But no. And this one, I think, is so easily accessible. I think this is like the prototype for pop culture referencing.
Yeah, so like the first one is, and it also shows how to do it correctly, because I have never, ever seen Ninotchka or Blackboard Jungle.
Nope.
I have not seen Gone with the Wind since
Same.
They made us watch it in school,
I never
eighth
seen
grade.
It. I ain't never seen that, no movie.
Wait, who's from the South?
Yeah.
Tennessee, they played it in the closed circuit television in our middle school.
Fair. Okay.
Fair.
So the first one is like, now here's a story of Ninotchka, story of a Russian woman, the first time she laughed, and it's just Harvey Korman sticks his elbow in soup accidentally, and then Carol Burnett as this severe Russian lady just like lets out this long, loud, nerdy laugh that is very embarrassing, and she's like, that's why I don't laugh.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the joke.
Yeah. The very short synopsis they give before this blackout sketch, I was like, first I was like, that's annoying, but it was like, oh, that's perfect. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's correct. Yeah.
The next one is Blackboard Jungle, about teaching like rough teenagers or whatever, and it's just Bob Newhart, and it's like, okay, everyone, please, like, director, like, no bullets at school. Please put your bullets up here.
Oh, bring your bullets. Everybody with all the kids in class with guns, I want your bullets up here now.
And then it's just Uzi fire at the blackboard, and then Bob reacting like, and I want to shout out his amazing blue suit in this little blackout sketch.
Good, really blue good suit.
Super solid on him, too. Yeah.
As the accountant, that corduroy jacket that he wore.
Oh. Yes.
Perfect.
I got rid of a Ralph Lauren rugby brown corduroy blazer that I had a couple of years ago, and I regret it to this day. I have no idea what convinced me to do that.
So then we just get a musical number that isn't the main musical they're going to be parodying later. It's just a Cheetah Rivera-like musical number with Vicky, Cheetah, and Carol.
Yes.
Just the three of them dancing. And at this point in my notes, all right, they are fucking working.
They were working, and it was very impressive. And I don't think it was meant to be funny at all.
No,
I think just impressive.
I love about television from the 70s is just like, you had a variety show and you need to be able to sing passively, dance passively, be funny. Like, It is a level of triple threat artistic talent that I would love to see on SNL more, like, oh, yeah. or on modern yeah. variety shows. Because it right. seems like now you get on, you're Pete Davidson, and you're like, you know, you're funny at being yourself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's enough. But it's like, no, man, I want you to be able, I want to see a show where everyone can sing and dance and be funny.
Right.
And
right.
that's what this is, and it's really cool.
That's true. There's, I was trying to think of like a, it felt like, this series and everything, I think, sort of before SNL is sort of, theatrical yeah. sketch where you can get away with, and I even feel like SNL, in the last few years has sort of drifted back towards elements of this where you can put up something like this where the audience is okay with it not being gut busting, but yeah. it's an impressive dance number. It's an impressive song number. Like the quality of performance is so good that it doesn't matter that it's not funny. You're engrossed by the performance and that's what counts.
I also love that, so nowadays in modern sketch, we have either your SNL, and before the dark times, you would do it live, and so it is like, warts and all, do it live, maybe the camera's gonna be blocked weird, maybe we're gonna flub lines, or you are the, like, Key and Peele, Schumer, you know, all like that, like, we are basically little mini films.
Yeah.
Carol Burnett, because they like didn't do it live, like did it live to tape twice mm-hmm. and then edited together the best and then presented that, you know, feasibly what, maybe like a week after they did it or something, like mm-hmm. it wasn't in post a lot. It hits this middle ground where it feels both live but also like perfected.
Right.
Like yes. you're not worried that like a camera is gonna linger long right. or, you know, cue cards are gonna
right.
like,
yep. have all their lines memorized.
We all did yeah. that really good library reading challenge sketch, which was so funny, but like the direction was weird and like the camera was on the wrong thing for too long during the sketch, and it's like that like
yeah.
if it's Carol Burnett's show, they're gonna do it again and then they'll use that.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. And that's it, there's a even within that, there's so much like precision to the performances on this show as well. Even when they are breaking, like they'll corpse, and you see it like in the Mountie sketch and musical number where Harvey and Carol are singing at the very end of everything, and they're both busting up on the swing, but they're yeah. busting up and still performing, which is yeah. so wild to me that they
well,
can continue.
That fan to cover her mouth, which
yeah,
is well,
yeah, yeah, yeah. That's true. Yeah. That's true.
So then we get then we get the Gone with the Wind skit, which was very funny, but then also a lot of things towards the end of this episode really highlighted how we used to think of women as property.
This is definitely from a different era. Yeah.
But it's like Gone with the Wind was. Well, the gag of it is he like Rhett or whatever, Lyle Wagner as handsome man from Gone with the Wind, and Vicki Lawrence as young debutante from yeah. Gone with the Wind. And he's like, oh, I'm going to carry you up the stairs, and essentially like rape you, like basically is the gag. Truly. She's like, I don't want to go up there. Don't take me. And he's like, I'm going to take you. The funny thing is when he picks her up, her hoop skirt just goes crazy and falls over and keep falling over, which is a really, really funny gag.
It was very fun. Yeah.
The context surrounding it is very like that's
uncomfortable.
The button at the end to get upstairs, and she's like, "You can't do this." And he's like, "Why?" He's like, "My bedroom's downstairs."
Yeah, that was great.
Like, oh, okay, it was consensual all along. Okay.
Yeah,
but his face, Lyle Wagner's face at the end is so good. Becky, you yeah. laughed out loud at his reaction.
Well, yeah, it was very funny. I mean, like, it's not their fault. Like, this is Gone with the Wind's fault. That they're talking about sure. raping women, you know?
Yeah.
And then the Carol Burnett show was trying to bring it to light in a funny way. Trying to get the conversation going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Water coolers in 1971.
Exactly.
So then we get essentially I didn't count it, but like maybe 11-minute mini musical sketch.
It went wow. through a commercial break.
Yeah, and it was called like Naughty Rosemary.
So these are... I had read that apparently, like, there was, it's not a genre, but there was like a popular movie series about Mounties, like in the 50s and 60s, and that this was actually sending up.
So I just watched over the weekend. I was like, So we were watching Mama's Family. Oh, it is all connected, honey. We were watching Mama's Family, which is spinoff of the Carol Burnett Show. And I was like, I love Ken Berry. Ken Berry is adorable. I loved Ken Berry on F Troop when I was a young gay child.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was like, oh, F Troop is now on iTunes. So I'll pay $3 for an HD remastered episode of F Troop.
Of course.
So I started with the season 2 premiere because that's when it was in color. Guest starring Paul Lind as a singing Mountie. And from Canada, and like Agarn's fur trapping French brother, twin like cousin, is in town. So like I watched this episode of F Troop, and then I watched the sketch, and I was like, oh, they're making fun of the exact same thing.
I think so, yeah.
It is a genre that has fully gone away. The Canadian wilderness, like there were, you know, native people in both things. Comfortably
offensive.
So. There was, you know, the fur trapper with a bad accent in both.
Yes, offensive.
Mounties that were singing. Yeah, it was a whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that funny that there are just like genres of film and musical and stuff that are gone to us?
Who knows what else is out there?
Truly.
And so, like, the whole plot of it is, like, Carol Burnett is playing a runaway princess, Princess Marie Rose, that is now, like, Rosemary. She's on the hideout because she's been engaged to this, like, gay, basically, like, very foppish.
Yes, yeah.
Definitely, like,
aristocrat. And then she falls in love with a Mountie, but then the aristocrat comes, and she hides as a Mountie. Then the aristocrat and the Mountie have a duel, and then, like, it's you know,
they have a sing-off.
They have a sing-off. So what I liked about it was Bob Newhart. So there are two jokes in this sketch.
Here we go.
When the Mounties come out and they are singing, they sing the line, "We always get our man," which is a Mountie, which is the Mountie catchphrase, by the way, because that was also an F Troop.
Yes.
Wow.
That was that. The Mountie always gets his man. There was a WWF wrestler named the Mountie in the early 90s, and that was how he ended every promo. The Mountie always gets his man.
Is a Mountie just a man? What, a bounty hunter?
It stands for RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
Oh, yeah. I understand. I didn't know.
Yeah.
So while they sing that, all of the men behind Harvey Korman as lead Mountie are essentially like holding each other and dancing together, saying the Mountie always gets his man. So that was point one.
I gotta say, before we even jump into the next part, I am so straight and dumb. That flew over my head even today. I want to apologize to everybody listening.
So that clued me in on something. And then when Bob Newhart comes out as the foppish Marquis de Fop, and he's like talking to Harvey Korman Mountie, and then under his breath he says, "Red is so out this year."
Yeah.
At that point I was like, there is a fucking homosexual on this writing staff, and I'm gonna find out who it is from that list of names. And I fucking found him. His name is Kenny Solms.
There we go.
And I went in a deep wiki rabbit hole on him. He was Gail Parent. So Gail Parent, who created Golden Girls.
Yes.
After this. So they were writing partners in college. They met in college and they wrote as a team on the Carol Burnett Show. And then after Carol Burnett Show, Kenny Solms like stuck with Tim Conway and wrote a bunch of like Tim Conway stuff.
Dorf on Golf?
Dorf, I don't know. But it was just like super cool to watch this episode and see those two jokes. Just like, those are gay man jokes.
Yes.
Yes.
No straight man in that room would have ever put that come joke up with in. Red is not in this year.
There was even what was Bob's first line when he comes in? Because he leaned into it in such a way.
Like, I hate your singing.
Yeah, that's what it was.
That was very funny. And also, he like paused, just the way he delivered it was also very funny. Yeah.
I loved Newhart's performance in this sketch. I thought that, especially for the era when it would have been so easy to push this far, far over the top and turn it into something that was, like offensive. You know, I think that Bob did a really good job with Bob did the job.
Yeah. And it's also just fun seeing him. So that's the other thing that I realized while watching Harvey Korman, who is a tall, masculine, he's a man. Like, he looks like your granddad in a way. Like, you know, he just is just like, you know, the kind of dude you would see at, like, the lodge.
Right.
But to see him in full, like, Mountie drag, singing and dancing, it made it, like, kind of crystallized this reason why I love this kind of stuff so much, is because comedy and this kind of stuff gives manlier or, like, more masculine presenting men a reason to be silly and not care. Under circumstances like when maybe normally a man should not be this silly, but, you know, It's just really cool to see. So,
I love,
like,
that
all the men in the sketches get to be very silly.
Silly and goofy.
Yeah, they're trying to, I think in a very masculine character, they try to hide their vulnerability through hyper-masculinity, right? And now we have characters within this era and within the sketch that are trying to, like mask different vulnerabilities in different ways. And I think that that challenge for those actors too is, like, really interesting to see them play that out in a way that doesn't feel like we're like, oh, okay, we need to apologize to the air while we're watching this alone at home.
It's like why, I mean, like, you know, save it for my therapist, but, like, as for, like, being gay, like, you being gay and growing up with, like, all the expectations that masculinity are, like, forced on you and stuff.
Yeah.
It makes you fearful of masculinity, which is why I relate to men like Bob Newhart so much, because they are unquestionably, like, masculine, but, like, in a, like, natural, like, like, kind of, like, you know, not a,
not toxic.
They don't use it as a weapon. They don't use masculinity as a weapon.
And it's men like Harvey Korman and, like, a Tim Conway and, like, those kind of just, like, affable, you know, funny dudes are men that I really, like, aspire to be like and, like, admire. You know, I don't know if they're problematic in any way.
I mean, kind of, right. I haven't checked them out.
I feel like they're all fine. Has Tim Conway been canceled?
No, but Dorf has. No, I'm kidding.
Dorf's
always been a problem.
People that don't know about Dorf, look it up.
I don't know.
I'll show you later.
I love them, and I love getting to watch them just, like, lean into just, like, musical theater fantasy and just commit so hard. You know, also, like, watching Celebrity Drag Race on VH1 right now is also, like, the same kind of thing, like seeing, you know, people like Dustin Milligan from Schitt's Creek, who was just on this most recent episode, like, be Nina West's daughter and, like, love it so much. You get to talk about how he, as a straight cisgender man, still, like, he opened up about, like, yeah, I feel all this pressure of masculinity on me. And it's, like, it's so cool to hear someone that is, ostensibly has all of the cultural power still be like, yeah, man, it's fucking hard.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I would... You know, it's cool.
Yeah.
So, not that, like, this is, not like they were, like, bursting down barriers in the Mountie sketch or anything, but it is just cool seeing so many men being so willing and open to just have fun.
Right.
And, yeah.
And, you know, I will say, too, this episode that we watched, all took place before Tim Conway was on the show, even.
Yeah, he was a frequent guest star for like the first 8 years and then came on full time. I thought he was always on full time, so I was shocked.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But the fact that this writing staff, the team on this show, and everyone was already had an eye on that. Like, that's not an accident that those are the men that they're presenting on television at that time. In America, you know what I mean? Like those people were cast for those reasons. And the fact that we had people that forward thinking back in the late 60s is, you know, a testament to the sort of progressive mentality that unfortunately it took a while for, and it's still taking a while for other parts of the country to still catch up to.
Comedy is great when it is pushing boundaries and people are just having fun.
Yes.
The episode ends with Carol Burnett introducing her sister. It ends with, like, another, like, here we're just gonna chat
with
the audience.
That was so funny.
Yeah.
Christ, my.
Well, you know,
just felt.
I had seen her sister during the dance sequence.
Yeah, same.
And I almost said it out loud. I was like, that woman looks like Sarah Silverman. That's crazy. And I think it might just be like the quality of the video and the distance of the camera. But then she pulled her up, and it turns out that was actually her sister too.
Yeah.
I thought that was really sweet,
that was
too.
Cute.
She had no qualms with being like, no, we're all going to share the stage together.
Yeah, it was really nice. And she was even like, now everyone thinks that Vicky Lawrence is my sister. She's not.
She's not,
like,
yeah.
And then she's like, it's really funny.
Yeah.
That's when I learned that Vicky Lawrence was not.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, 50 years later, I'm glad that Carolina made that distinction in the episode.
Yes, me too.
Thank goodness. Yeah.
Are y'all ready for some must-have facts?
Oh, yes, boy, buddy. We're so ready.
Oh, my God. So...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
About 19.8 million people watched this season of television. I don't know.
That seems like a lot.
I don't know how many watched this specific episode, but 19.8 million. But it was only 25th. Of all the shows of the season.
Carol Burnett's show never broke the top 10 in the Nielsen's. It's one of the greatest sitcom, or like one of the greatest TV shows of all time. Never broke into the top 10.
I know why. Because she's a woman. Oh, what?
I feel like it was probably because it came on at 10 p.m.
Like, yeah, you know, for sure.
Was the like
no excuse. No, that's probably the real reason. And that's crazy. Actually, that's crazy too, that the 10 p.m. Saturday night television show actually was consistently in the 20s, and then at the end of the series was in the teens.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Get. You know, we might see this return to like a blockbuster Saturday night powerhouse lineup in these times now that we can't go anywhere.
True.
You're not wrong.
What a dream it would be. Maybe I should do this on Must Have Seen TV and every night just air an episode. Oh my God, could I do this? It was, no, All in the Family. Can't find All in the Family anywhere. Fuck.
Oh.
I'll figure it out. But Bob Newhart Show, All in the Family, Mary Tyler Moore, MASH, and Carol Burnett were the Saturday night lineup.
Wow. CBS.
Which is like...
That's crazy!
You know, it's just like CBS just like fucking flexing. Because I think it was like... Was it All in the Family, Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart, MASH, Carol Burnett? It was like some order of that. It was
CBS. Like, we've got it from here, television.
Yeah. So the top five shows of this week of television, because I did find this information. Number five was the NBC Saturday night movie McClintock.
Oh, McClintock. Okay.
Yeah. Number four was Here's Lucy. Lucille Ball's third sitcom.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Number three was Hawaii 5-0.
Oh, classic.
Two was Marcus Welby, MD. And number one was The Flip Wilson Show.
The Flip Wilson Show was the number one show on television.
I never heard of him.
Flip Wilson was, speaking of Nick at Night, Flip Wilson was on Nick at Night in the 90s all the time.
I watched Flip Wilson a lot.
Yeah.
It was basically the Carol Burnett Show, but he was a black man. Like,
yes.
It was
okay, incredible.
The same type of, like, we're going to do sketches and, like, songs and dance. And he had a drag character that he did.
Wow.
What was her name? Oh, God, I should know that.
I was going to say, it sounds like it's, like, a TV show filmed in a hotel on, like, the Disney Channel. Flip Wilson.
Yeah, it's a spinoff of Drake and Josh.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Drag character. Oh, I should know this. This is going to drum. Wasn't it Geraldine Jones?
Oh, Geraldine! Yeah.
Geraldine was played as a sassy, liberated Southern woman who is coarsely flirty, yet faithful to her unseen boyfriend, Killer.
Killer!
See, even that description made me laugh. So, yeah. Comedy gold. So, at this time, though, because this is before All in the Family debuted, Mary Tyler Moore had already debuted, but it was in, like, season one. So Carol Burnett joined a little bit later. So it was on Monday nights on CBS at this time.
Oh.
And the lineup on Monday nights for CBS at this time were kicking off that night with a little Gunsmoke action.
Oh, yeah.
Season, like, something of Gunsmoke. And then following that up with Here's Lucy. Then Mayberry RFD, which is the Andy Griffith follow-up show.
Yeah.
From Ken Berry.
Yep.
The Doris Day Show, which was itself kind of a predecessor to the Mary Tyler Moore Show, but not really. And then the Carol Burnett Show closed out that night.
Yep. So,
interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. I did not look up. Hold on. I can do this. I don't edit these episodes. I don't edit them one
you
bit.
You shouldn't. So you're just gonna
have
to
no.
Listen to me Googling this right now.
The Carol Burnett Show. That's the song,
go
right?
To IMDb. Okay. So on IMDb, 13 IMDb users rated this episode a 9.1 out of 10.
Okay.
Oh, incredible
Holy
score.
Shit.
Incredible.
So, yeah. Higher or lower than those 13?
Haven't seen any other episodes, so I'll give it also a 9.1.
Trust the experts.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the experts on
I'll
this.
I'll tell you what, I would give it an 8.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tough crowd.
Yeah. Okay. I would give it an eight, but I think that's also because I'm looking at it through like the lens of I'm watching it in 2020. And I also know that there are much better episodes of the series that are available, and there are much more legendary sketches that came out of it. But even then, this was still incredibly fun, incredibly enjoyable to watch. I was laughing out loud.
You know what? If it was directed by a woman, it'd be a 10. I'm sure the director was very incredible director. I don't even know who it was.
Dave Powers.
There you go. Classic DP.
If he's still working, would love to talk with him.
Oh, he did all of Mama's Family.
Okay.
Or most all of Mama's Family.
Well, sounds that makes like sense.
And good director.
All of Three's Company.
Okay, good director, probably.
Yeah, this guy knows his stuff.
So, he knew what he was doing. Yeah, I would say, like, solid eight. Eight is usually, I give an eight to things that I'm like, yeah, liked it. Liked watching it. I feel like other people might use that for a 7, but I use it for an 8.
I like that.
Who had the must-see performance of this variety spectacular? Because we get to see all of them do a show a range.
Yeah.
There's range going on here.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a Carol Burnett.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah, that seems right.
Why?
Because she is very good. She made me laugh. She
way to articulate.
Yeah, absolutely. Very articulate. She made me laugh. Incredible dancer.
Yeah.
She's good singing.
Yep. She's good singing.
She's good singing. What do you think?
I would say Carol, but I don't want to draft off of your choice, so I will pick a different choice. I will say Bob Newhart. I'll say Bob because I was so enjoyably surprised by the choices that he made whenever he was on screen. The Blackboard Jungle sketch. There's a moment
for that reaction if those were done.
Yes, when the bullets hit. There is a moment where he reacts to it happening, and there's just so much in it that killed me. I love that. I would go with
Bob Newhart. Wait, is that when they like zoom in and he does this face?
Yeah.
I love that.
I laughed because that was like an OSFUG reaction.
Yeah.
I'm ironic.
No, that was the Gone with the Wind sketch.
Oh, that was Gone.
That was Gone with the Wind sketch. Yeah.
Just like giving like that big arch eyebrow.
Yeah.
I am contractually obligated to give it to Bob Newhart.
Yeah, for sure.
No, I know that. Yeah.
He's my granddad.
Congrats.
Wish, no. Must other people see this episode of television?
I would say yes.
Well, I would say, excuse me, sir. Sorry, we our dog.
Excuse me, sir.
Do you want to watch Carol Burnett? I would also say yes. I mean, if you haven't seen any, so see something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, I would absolutely. What do you think?
I mean, I'm sure there, you know, you might want to start with a Tim Conway one, TBH, because when you think of Carol Menesha, you think of Vicky Harvey, Tim, and Carol. But I think just for starting out with a random one, like,
yeah,
kind of makes me think you could roll the dice and just pick one and you're probably going to be golden.
I feel that same way too.
I think so too.
It's the same with Laugh-In. I've watched a lot of Laugh-In recently. Laugh-In is like watching a literal 50-minute Vine compilation.
I don't like that.
The 60s.
That is the most, it took Vine to be created for someone to find the most accurate description of Laugh-In. And yeah, I think that you found it.
TikTok, but.
Yes.
But Laugh-In is just like a nonstop barrage. It's like they turn on the hose with one-liners and just are just firing it at you for a solid hour.
It's
exhausting.
The commercial breaks. The commercial breaks were so much shorter.
I've never
in
seen Laugh-In.
The 60s and 70s, which means that. Yeah.
It is a trip.
It's 54 minutes, not 44.
What they would do with Laugh-In, I think, was they would just get, like, who's in town this weekend? Come to the set. And they would just get them in front of camera, give them a whole bunch of one-liners, and then they would edit together, like, 6 episodes out of that hours of footage.
Yeah.
So, like, you look on IMDb, it would be like, oh, Charles Nelson Reilly's in these 5 episodes. It's like, oh, no. He just went one day, said 30 one-liners, and they just like split them across all these.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. Yeah, he's wearing the same thing in 5 episodes.
it is intense. Like, they have sketches that cut out the setup and cut out the end, and it's just like the middle where random crazy shit's happening.
Oh my god.
Wow.
I think, hey, watch some Laugh-In.
Yeah, I feel like I need to revisit it now. Yeah.
It was on Prime as well. Prime is your home for if you want to recreate the feel of being in a cigarette-filled, gin-soaked, like, 70s hotel room. Like,
Amazon Prime, baby.
Because they got Dean Martin roasts on there.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. They have – there's a lot of, like, really great archival television.
They have, like, that, like, 80s improv stand-up, like, anthology series.
Live at the Improv.
Yeah, like Live at the Improv, like stand-up of
yes.
80s comedians is on there.
Wow.
Oh, man.
And the thing is, like, Amazon's interface is awful, so you really have to search, but, like, you will find things that's like, do they know this is on here?
Do they know? Yeah, do they mean for this? Yeah.
I'm like, did someone just upload this? Like, are we cool with this? No. Okay. Yeah, it's wild. Anyway, yeah, so where can people find you on the internet if they want to, you know, talk about the Carol Burnett Show and Vine?
Okay, at Becky Shacoin across all platforms, including TikTok.
Shit!
Yeah.
Hold on.
You can also catch...
2000.
But you can also catch Becky.
That's right.
You can also catch you on
you
Girls with Brown Hair.
Me. Yeah, but I'll usually post all of those videos also on my Instagram for the views. But
That's true. You just recently put up a very fun Sarah Bareilles.
And that one is only on the Girls with Brown Hair YouTube and Instagram.
Yeah.
It's a Sarah Bareilles 40th birthday tribute concert in the vein of the Sondheim. It's a lot of explanation and...
It was Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Sondheim.
Oh, boy.
Andrew Lloyd Webber?
Wow. Brett, imagine not knowing anything, having a spouse that knew nothing about comics and then asking you random questions about things that they should know. And that's what it's like with me and theater for her, because I don't know anything. And she's like...
I was at a very gay diner in upstate New York, and the waiter was like... You look just like Stephen Sondheim, and then took a photo of me to text to all of his friends.
Okay, he's literally 90, Brett.
Yeah. What?
I don't know, like, what era of Sondheim.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
Okay. I don't know him.
And I've Googled, I'm like, I guess I kind of see Sondheim.
I don't know. I don't feel it, but good for that person.
Apparently I make a resting face.
Okay, resting sun. Okay, all right, I like that. I buy it.
Sure.
There it is. I see it.
So text all your friends that photo.
There you go.
I will.
And what is your quarantine content, Matt?
Oh, boy.
Well, are you currently wilding out online in these wild west times?
Oh, man. Well, you can catch me on Twitter at TheMattLittle, Instagram at MattLittle, and you can catch me on Instagram Thursday nights at 8 p.m. live.
Every 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Eastern Standard Time, doing a little bit of comics talk with a gentleman named Brett White.
What up? Back in the habit, like Whoopi Goldberg.
Back in the habit, like Whoopi Goldberg, baby.
Yeah. So yeah, follow us on Instagram and keep up with that. Yeah. And oh shit! I have to actually write. I have to do my outro, which I didn't write that. Hey, you know what, everybody? You are seeing
quarantine.
The wheels turning.
Here we go.
It's fine. Everyone loves a quarantine episode of podcast. And that does it for this episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guests, Becky Chacon and Matt Little, for dropping by and talking about The Cara Burnett Show with me. Next time, I'll be discussing the Wonder Years episode, Pottery Will Get You Nowhere. That is in Season 2. It is Episode 6 of Season 2, and you can stream The Wonder Years on Hulu. Probably without the original music in it because of rights issues, but you know what? We will deal with that next week when I talk about it. Till then, I want to hear from all of you. Follow Must Have Seen TV on Twitter and Instagram. Let's talk about sitcoms and also peep that new podcast art by Dynamo. Hopefully,
woo! It's
put up in your podcast apps. And if you want to watch live streams of classic sitcoms, I think I'm just going to be doing that on Instagram. So follow the account on Instagram. You'll get notifications that I'm going live, and then watch out, because then when you click on it, you're going to see a 1986 television playing Hulu on it. And the aspect ratio is going to be weird, but hey, beggars can't be choosers.
I love that.
Hey, listen, everybody's aspect ratio is weird. And that's what makes America beautiful.
MustHaveSeenTV@gmail.com with comments and requests, and hopefully I will read them and get to them. I'm really bad about following up with email. Sorry about that. If you like what you've heard, maybe not this episode because I am losing my mind in this one. God, I'm just dying inside. Please rate and review the show in Apple Podcasts. And also, if you tell me to do a show in the review, 5-star review, I will do it, as I have done with Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet and Who's the Boss so far. And that means Duckman is coming up. Don't worry.
Whoa.
Someone requested Duckman in a review, and I will follow through.
Oh, can't
follow
wait for
on
that.
Twitter and Instagram at @White. Read the words that are right at Decider.com. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to y'all for listening. And I will see you next time on Must Have Seen TV.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.